Eclectic.
Welcome to Eclectic, the podcast about anything and everything youth ministry, you name it. I'm Rob Brower.
I'm Scott Davis.
And just recently, in the recent past, was Memorial Day weekend.
Yes.
And everybody knows that Memorial Day weekend is the weekend where everybody goes camping and stuff and take off and go do stuff with the family. What'd you guys do?
We didn't do some of the stuff we intended to do because we ended up with a sick child. She ended up being, as we're recording this, today is her first day back at school after 10 days of being sick.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Like the fever, flu? Or?
Yeah, flu. Like there's a lot of pneumonia-ish type of stuff going on right now, so we've been concerned. We actually took her in a couple of different times. They did blood tests, urine tests, mono tests, blah, blah, blah. They tested it all, except they actually didn't test. They listened to her lungs, but they didn't do, like, pneumonia test or whatever they do for that. But never any respiratory issues. It's all been just fever. Fever,
wow.
fever. Not even so much as a runny nose or a cough of any kind. So just fever.
And but
just,
she's good now.
She is good now. Our policy is, you know, if you're sick with a fever, you got to be completely fever-free before you go back to school or get back into the normal of life.
Yeah.
And so she was home all day yesterday. And finally, no fever all day long. She was actually under. She was like 98.0 a lot of the day.
Yeah.
And so she was less than fever. She's making up for it. But anyway, so I took the two healthy kids up to my parents' place, and we did some work for them, some yard work and stuff like that. And we barbecued with them when we were done with the yard work. So, you know, not some of the stuff we like to do.
I'm picturing her at home. Papa, can I go?
You must stay home. I'll take your siblings.
Might I have a morsel of a hamburger, Father? No, you get nothing.
None for you. You are sick.
Here's your broth. Drink your broth.
Exactly. Well, I'm glad she's feeling better.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so...
how about you? What did you do for Memorial Day weekend?
My anniversary is May 26th.
Oh, happy anniversary.
And I left on May 26th to go to Nampa,
Idaho. Oh!
I took a bunch of teens because our district had this thing called The Gathering. And a bunch of churches, not just from our district, but our field, meet up there, and it was a great time.
So happy anniversary, Dana! I'm leaving. Anniversary present. I'm leaving.
I'm
town.
Giving you some peace and quiet.
Yes.
I know that's what you've been
that
wanting.
That is a gift
for 17 years. You're finally getting it. Here you go. Congratulations.
I don't mean to distract from your story. Go ahead to your story.
So we took.
I'm just thinking she had to be excited.
I made it up to her.
After we got back, I took
her out to dinner.
I saw some Facebook pictures.
Yes, I took her to Anthony's and we celebrated. And
beautiful picture, the water, the Capitol in the background.
Lovely dinner, and we went and walked on the boardwalk around Capitol Lake.
Yeah.
Which is a lake that's over by our state capitol. It's beautiful out there. It was a little windy, but it was okay.
Can I say something really quick?
Yes, of course.
Dana, happy anniversary.
She doesn't listen to this podcast.
But she should, because tell her she has to listen to this one.
You should.
Happy anniversary. You deserve extra stars, extra jewels in your crown, because you're married to Rob.
Nicole, ditto. So The Gathering.
Yes.
What was really cool is they brought in a speaker and a worship band, and they had you know, these moments where the students could go and worship, and the theme was, you know, knowing God, truly knowing God. And so they brought in guest speaker Shauna Songer Gaines, who happens to be the chaplain over at Tribeca Nazarene University.
For non-Nazarenes listening to this, Tribeca is a Nazarene college, and it is located in Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, y'all. She was great. She was a great speaker. Got to know her. So it was really cool. So they have all these workshops, and the kids could go, and they could do a workshop on sports like volleyball or basketball, or they could do a workshop on worship. And it gives the kids an opportunity to talk to people on the campus and whatnot. They asked me if I would do a workshop.
Well, and these workshops are all intentionally interactive.
Yes.
They're active.
Exactly.
They're not just interactive. They're active, not lecture.
They're not
lectures. Let me talk to you about
this.
They're
not lectures.
Get up and moving and do.
So they asked if I would do a workshop. They basically, you know, hey, Rob, wait a minute. You originally went to school and you were a theater arts major, right? And I said, yeah. Would you be willing to do a workshop on acting? And I said, sure. So I did an improv workshop called Improv Skills That Pay the Bills. And the thing was jam-packed. All three of my sessions were just filled up.
Very cool.
As a matter of fact, by the time we got there to register, and we weren't particularly late, by the time we got there to register our kids, the first two sessions were already full.
Oh, wow.
And so my kids were like, we can only go to your third session, so we're going to have to swap some things around. And it was actually really cool. But in my workshop, I start talking about, and I was thinking of you when I was planning my workshop, because I know you geek out on like neuroscience, right? So I start the thing off with a vulnerability exercise. And it's really weird. I haven't gotten into groups with like four, and I separate the kids that all came together. So I line them all up shoulder to shoulder, all the kids that came together, and then I go, you know, count off by five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I have five groups of like four, and I have them introduce themselves, say your name, but my friends call me, I live in or at, and then I like to, but the deal is it has to be all lies. All lies. And here's the interesting thing.
Including the name and the my name, friends call me.
Yeah. So it gets them doing a couple of things. Number one.
My name is Howard. My friends call me Bucky. Whatever.
Yeah. You know, I live in the fourth dimension, and for fun, I like to eat rattlesnakes. You know, and but.
Did you say eat or heat?
Eat. Oh. Heat. I heat them up and then I eat them.
Okay.
So the deal is.
Better than eating them cold.
The deal is there's a couple of things that I want them to learn from this. Number one, people start to put up walls whenever they have to be vulnerable. And mm-hmm. the first defense mechanism is to just go goofy with it, you know. And they come up with a goofy name and a goofy nickname. And then I'll stop them and say, hey, I want you to do this again. But do it like it's serious. Like this is your actual information you're giving them. You know, pretend you're a spy and you have to give them your cover story. And if you fail at it and you crack up in the middle of it, I mean – your cover's blown. And so I have these kids redo it, the ones that get goofy. And then I explain to them, you know, ask them, was it difficult? And a lot of them say, yeah, well, what was difficult? Some of them will say, well, it was hard to think of that kind of information on the fly. Okay, so the creativity part is difficult. But other kids will find it difficult because your brain actually doesn't know the difference between a truth and a lie when it comes to vulnerability. The vulnerability is still there. You have to let your guard down and share something even though it's a lie, but it's the same psychologically. And so that's kind of a weird thing, but that's how the brain works. Your brain can't really tell the difference between a truth and a lie. And I was talking to a kid, and like, you're a tall guy, Scott, mm-hmm. right? But let's say your dad was a foot taller than you, right. And your whole life you never measured up to him, and he said, shrimp, man, why are you so short? And you hear that for years and years. Eventually, you believe it's true.
Yeah, though I'm tall, even though you're tall, like a shrimp. Yeah,
and 99% of people in the world are gonna say, "Dude, you're tall." You're gonna be like, "Well, I never tried out for the NBA because I'm too short." What are you talking about? You're too short.
I never tried out for the NBA because I just am not very good at all at basketball.
And that's another truth. But your brain wouldn't know the difference between the two. And so then I
lie to myself about it all the time. But the reality is, the truth is, I'm not good.
I used to tell myself I was tall enough, but I'm not for the NBA. And so, okay, so then I start going into the decision making. And in improv, you have to accept whatever your partner gives you, right? So if we're in a scene and I'm like, oh no, Scott, there's a horde attacking us. Here, let me grab my laser rifle. Now, you just have to accept this truth that I have a laser rifle. Whether laser rifles exist or not, you know? And then you have to add to the scene. And so you could block me and say, no, forget the laser rifle. I've got a giant Gatling gun that shoots missiles. Well, now you just shot me down. In essence, what you told me is your idea is dumb. My idea is better. Right. So it's hard to have a scene when we're the only two players. We have to be vulnerable with each other, and we have to have that give and take, right?
I've heard that improv, you never reject what somebody
never
else brings
reject.
Out. Never reject somebody else's idea. Always build on.
Always build on it and always commit. And so then I stop in the exercise and I teach them that this is what happens. Like when you go hiking up a snowy mountain, the first guy is breaking ground. He's literally walking through knee to chest high snow sometimes. And the second person following can either break ground on their own and then they're both getting exhausted, or they can follow in the footsteps, right? Well, your neurons do the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. You start thinking negatively, your neurons are creating that negative thought pathway.
Right. Right.
The next time.
And there's a lot of recent studies that have come out that back that up.
Yeah. And so what happens is you are basically hardwiring your brain for negative thought. If you keep thinking negatively all the time, you're going to be a grumpy old negative person. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. Right. So we're training them to change their thought process, learn to accept, learn to build on that, right? So this story gets really interesting, okay? After the workshops, The kids get some free time. They're having root beer floats and stuff over in the big gym on the university campus. And one of the dads comes to me and says, "Hey, really, I came in at the end of your workshop and I was videotaping my son. I hope that was okay." I said, "Absolutely no problem." And he said, "Hey, thanks for your workshop, man. That was great stuff. And it was really funny." And I said, "Well, you came in at the end when they got to just do this improv game called Freeze Tag, right? Two people are playing a scene. You yell out freeze. You have to assume one of their, you tag them out and assume their position and then take the scene in a completely different way. So this is their chance to put together all the skills that they've learned in the first part of this workshop." But the workshop was about 75 minutes long. Last 20 minutes, we let them play freeze tag, right? Well, I started sharing with him some of this neurology stuff. And he goes, "You're exactly right." He says, "You know, for a living, I'm actually a therapist." I'm like, "Really?" So he tells me, he goes, "I'm in a very specialized field. You should look it up, called EMDR. And EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing." Very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So he starts telling me about this. And I don't know how we get on the topic, but I talked to him about my bee phobia. Because he says he works with a lot of trauma patients, PTSD, things like that. And they say that a lot of PTSD, if it can be linked to a childhood memory, his field, his method, this EMDR, can clear that trauma. And I was like, "Well, I've got this bee phobia, and I know it stems from this time when I was like in fourth grade, and I knocked down a hornet's nest with a garden hose. My mom told me to water the rhododendron bush, and I go to spray it, and it's set to jet stream. One in a million shot, I hit a hornet's nest, pop it wide open, they all swarm me, okay? Summertime, I'm wearing just shorts. I try to get back into the house, but my mom was Windexing the storm door and accidentally hit that lock tab, so I'm locked out, and I am trying to get in. I'm calling for her, "Mommy, mommy," and I'm just getting eaten alive. And the last thing I remember, she's squishing hornets on me, and I can feel them, and I wake up in the emergency room, right, with IV drip. So that's when I found out I was allergic to – that may have caused me to become allergic, right?
Yeah.
So I have this traumatic experience, and he says, "You know, I can tell – because the way that you're tensing up just as you're retelling the story." And I realize, "Oh, I am." And like, my neck is all tight. And he goes, "Man," he said, "if you had 20, 30 minutes, I could cure you of that." I said, "No way." He said, "Absolutely." So we go and
no way, we you find, went and did this.
I did it. I was game.
Oh, this is so cool.
I was thinking of you the whole time. Dude. Oh. I was like, "I wish Scott were here." So we go into a back corner, and it's really interesting. So he does an interview process, and he asks me about the trauma, and he tells me about this EMDR process. And basically what he does is he says, "Okay, like, how do you feel? How did it make you feel? What is the emotion, right?" And you saw the video because you haven't heard this story. They don't know this.
No, yeah.
All I texted you was, "Dude, look up EMDR. I got a story to tell you."
Yes.
And you're hearing it for the first time now.
Yeah, and we got together and we decided before we started recording, you know, it was like, "Do you want to know the story now or do you want to let it be live?" And I'm like, "Oh, let it be live. Yeah, we'll see what it's like."
They can see the look on your face, like the excitement. You're like a kid in a candy store.
I know. Yes,
so,
I am.
So what he does is
brain
is
candy. Okay.
He's been trained to move his hand a specific distance and at a certain tempo. And I hold my head still and I follow just with my pupils. I follow his hand movement and it simulates the REM sleep, rapid eye movement.
Right.
And what happens when our bodies go into REM sleep is we can process a ton more of information, a ton faster, because our brain power isn't being utilized for all the other stuff like walking around and balance and, you know, all of that stuff. Right. And so, you know, when they say sleep on it, it's an actual thing. If you're trying to struggle to figure out a problem and you're like, "I don't know what to do about this problem," it's a good idea to actually sleep on it, because your brain will keep thinking about it as you sleep. It's also the time in which our brains do repair work, right?
Yes.
So they do all the repair work and stuff while we're sleeping. So he has me focus on the problem, and we figured out that I felt powerless, and that's really the emotion tied to it, right? Much more than fear, what drives that fear is this powerlessness. And so he has me focus on it, and he actually has me repeat in my mind, "I am powerless. I am powerless," as I replay the scene in my mind, and he does the hand thing. And it was the first couple of times, it was like really scary. Like, I felt like I was there again, and like the tension in my shoulders and my neck, and like I was holding my breath at one point. So he's having me breathe, and you know, and then he's asking me these questions, and then we go through it like about 10 times. But what's interesting is every time we would go through the scene, I would become desensitized to it. And after a while, it was like I'm not in the scene reliving it first person. It was like I was watching a home movie on a screen. So it was like farther out in front of me.
Oh,
and so once cool. once I became desensitized and removed from the scene, now came the really weird stuff, the reprocessing. Okay. He says, so what's your source of power? And as a Christian, and he's a Christian as well, which was awesome. He said, like, you know, what's your source of power, your strength? Like, where would you get power from since you feel powerless? And I said, well, the church answer is Christ. But yeah, from Christ, you know? And he goes, okay. He says, I want you to say, I have power over this. So I would say it.
Okay. I was wondering if there was the positive.
He says, yeah. In your mind, 1 through 7, what's the validity of that statement, honestly? I said, 3. Like if I think about being afraid of the bees and like I have power over my fear of bees, I know God can do anything, but right now I feel like it's a 3 if he doesn't intervene.
Oh, this is so cool.
And so he says, okay, I want you to replay the scene again. And he was talking about how you should feel more detached from it. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm explaining. He said, he described like you're looking out a train window and the scenes are just flashing by. And I was like, that's right. Exactly what it's like. It feels like a whole movie. He says, okay, exactly. So he says, okay. This time, after I replayed it a few times with I have power over this, he says, go in. And I could see myself in these scenes now, which was different. Before I was in them, now I can see my younger self. He says, this time, ask your younger self what he needs and then give it to him. And boy, I had cried a few times earlier, you know, just thinking about it. Why do you feel powerless? And he asked me, like, what I felt powerless about, and I felt like my mom should have opened the door, and she didn't, and so there was a part of me that was a little bit angry at her, and I felt like I didn't get protected by my mom.
Right.
And so when I asked my younger self that was the emotion that came up, like, I need to be protected. So I threw myself in my mind's eye, I threw myself over my younger me, and I felt like I, like myself as a dad, throwing myself over my kid to protect them from the bee stings. And, you know, the fear wasn't there. It was my fear was more a concern for my younger self getting stung. And so I was willing to take all the stings. I didn't feel a single sting because obviously my present self wasn't in that. And I protected him. And I could tell as he's doing the hand movement side to side, my eyes are moving, I could feel the tears welling up. And after he brings me out of that and I take a few deep breaths and we start processing that emotion. And he said, there you go. I'm like, what do you mean? He says, you're good to go. I said, no way. And he says, you overcame the fear.
Yeah.
The fear wasn't driving it. It was the emotion of powerlessness and helplessness and the thought that somebody needed to protect me and didn't. And now you've given yourself those things. So now when you look back on the memory, it's not just the fear of getting stung that you remember, or the helplessness of being locked out and feeling powerless over the whole situation.
Or even the anxiety toward your mom.
Yeah, and it is, I have power over this. And so what happens, though, he was saying is, when you have a trauma like that, your amygdala kicks in and that fight or flight, even though your brain can process logic, you can't make your decisions based on that logic when the amygdala takes over. It is impossible. And so... even though I know there's no reason to be afraid of the bee or the fly when I hear a buzzing sound, that's kind of one of those things that triggered me, is just that buzzing. That because at some point in that memory, before I got stung, I heard that swarm of zzzz, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it used to freak me out. Now, here's the crazy thing. I felt a lot better. And now when I reprocess that story and I tell it, like, I don't have that intrepidation anymore and I don't have anxiety. But I haven't encountered a bee yet. I want to see a bee. So I watched some bee videos on YouTube.
Okay, now normally bring some stress?
Normally would freak me out. I was watching this video of a guy saying, you got it all wrong with yellow jackets. And he's letting a yellow jacket walk on his hand, and he's stroking it. And he goes, as long as they're eating and whatnot, and you're not pulling them away from their food or like squishing them hard and doing harm to them, they're not going to bother you. And so... like, I wasn't bothered by the video at all, and I'm thinking to myself, I could let a yellow jacket walk on me right now, which is crazy. Absolutely crazy.
So many things rushing through my head that I want to say. Oh, my goodness.
So I know that was a long story.
Yeah.
But I know that you really geek out on this idea of understanding teens by understanding why they
act
psychology.
Why do they act the way they act? And a lot of it's because of where their brain is in development, from their impulsive decisions to their difficulty. You can tell them one thing in 1 second, and some of them, and then like 30 seconds later, it's like, oh, what did you just say to me? And it just all of these different things. Oh boy. Okay. So. Oh, so many things running through my head. You know, the traumatic memories get placed in there.
Yeah.
So like the hippocampus is memory. The amygdala is emotion, and especially in dealing with fight or flight emotions and such. And even the thalamus and is like the central processing center of all of the you know, all of the stuff coming from the spinal cord, from our from touching, seeing, smelling, even tasting. All of those things process through the thalamus, which and all of those pieces are part of the limbic system, which is also known as the reptilian brain or the lizard brain. It controls all of the involuntary responses, the beating of our heart, the breathing, all of these things that are involuntary, including rapid eye movement when we're sleeping.
Yes.
And so rapid eye movement, we're sleeping. I feel like I'm jumping from one thing I'm wanting to say to another thing, but there's so many things that were coming to my mind as we're going through this, like, so cool. So when a traumatic thing happens to us, whether it's something as a child or even a soldier out in war, we're out there. There are these scenarios that are significant and associated with a strong emotion, a fight or flight type emotion on some level. And so the connection of this memory event to this fear or breakdown or whatever you want to call it. Becomes so incredibly strong. A child has not yet learned how to process on that level, which is one of the reasons why it stays so deeply connected to that. A soldier, and there's a bit of this that's conjecture, a bit of this that's not necessarily scientifically proven, and a bit of it's just theory, but I think there's a lot of truth to it as well. But a soldier, they're trained that whatever happens, you still have a job to do, and so you got to suck it up and keep moving forward. And in those moments, they're not allowing their brain to really process what they've just experienced. And then they walk away from that experience, and they've got to continue to be the soldier, and then they have another job to do and another job to do, and they're not afforded the ability to really. So a child not allowed to process or not able to process, a soldier essentially taught not to do it. You don't have the time, you don't have the freedom to do it, and to take a break and to process, because especially traumatic events need to be processed within the first 24 hours or that window closes. And so so then okay, rapid eye movement, processing of short-term memory into long-term memory, simulating it while we're awake can be powerful, although maybe not as powerful as while we're sleeping, but it's still powerful. And I've heard it's a little bit of the research on EMDR that I did revealed some therapists will use the hand motion, which is what I did. You know, people couldn't see that, but that's what I was doing. And you're like, oh, you research. Some people will do the hand motion. Others will have you wear headphones, and they have the auditory sounds that, you know, when you hear the sound in the right ear, move your eyes to the right or the left ear to the left, and it'll do it on a certain pace. Or some will do like tapping, alternating tappings of the shoulder.
I've seen it on the hands too, like your hands are on your
I think
lap.
I don't know this for sure, but I think what I'm seeing, what I've seen and a little bit of what I've looked at is the hand motion alternating right to left. It's less, you know, it's less invasive in touching. It's less, you don't have to have the expense of a system that does the auditory stuff, whatever. But all of these things, they walk you through, makes total sense to me. You walk you through, reopen the wound.
Reopen the wound by recalling
the thing, and to do it so many times, it kind of reopens that 24-hour period of dealing with it and processing it.
Yep.
Which, for your whole life, when that memory comes up, you do, your fight or flight comes in, and you go flight. You do everything you can to get away from the stimulus that brought the memory up to shut it down.
Yeah, it's a trigger, rather, and I couldn't help it.
Yeah, rather exactly, and it's involuntary. It's a trigger. It's coming from that part of your brain that if people. My hands are like going like crazy because I'm.
Well, I'll tell you. So in college,
it's from the lizard brain. Yeah, that's, a friend that of deals ours with the involuntary
rolled a car.
Movement.
She had a bee phobia. A bee flew into her car while she was driving on the freeway, and freaked out. Let go of the wheel. Now that's illogical. Letting go of a wheel while you're going 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But she's trying to keep this bee off of her, and she wound up rolling a car, and she survived with just some bruises and scratches, but totaled her car because once that fight or flight kicks in, you the logic goes out the window.
Right.
And so I want to bring this back to our teens for a second, right?
Yeah.
So let's say you got this teen that just cannot be quiet during youth group. Now, so as I was talking to him about this stuff, he was bringing some stuff to light that I didn't even know, right? So yes, it might seem like this kid just needs a good spank or whatever. The bottom line is we don't know what's going on at home necessarily. And on an emotional level, they may feel like they're not being heard. But at home, they're told, hey, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, stop talking. And then they get to youth group and it's the one time where they might be able to feel heard. And so while they're talking, while you're talking is disrupting class, the question that we need to ask instead of just jumping straight to discipline.
Why are you talking?
Why are they talking? Why can they not be quiet? And it might be that they have a psychological wound of some kind, and it doesn't have to be a huge wound, but just they feel like they don't get heard. So when you pull that child aside in like small group discussion, rather than, hey, stop disrupting, and I've done this, and I didn't know that this is why it worked. I call on the talkative student. And I say, hey, Scott, what do you think about this? Oh, I don't know. No, I'm serious. I'm curious what you think. I want to hear your opinion.
Yeah.
Not ask them to regurgitate an answer, but their opinion. Like, how does that make you feel? And let them share their feelings. And they feel like, oh, I actually get this.
I get to be heard here. Yeah.
I'm heard. And so it's kind of weird. But I think a lot of youth workers would overlook the psychology of the teenage mind and thereby miss out on a lot of opportunities to really connect and to truly love on kids.
So like in your where you reopen this memory, you reopen that 24-hour window of dealing with it. Not that you're necessarily stuck to 24 hours because you don't want to wait. You got it open. Let's deal with it now. What needs to happen is a dissociation, which is the D.
Desensitize.
But you dissociate the memory from the negative emotion.
Yep.
And pair it with a more positive emotion. Where is your power?
Yeah.
Christ. And so you dissociate it and deprogram it from that connection. Mm-hmm. And then you reprogram it. You reconnect it to a positive way of thinking. I have a condition called misophonia, and it's kind of a sound rage or whatever, and it's a trigger system. And some of the therapies that I've recently found, I've struggled with my whole life, recently come up, and I need to be quick because we are so long with this one, with this episode. But, you mentioned when I came here that my whole misophonia, my trigger thing with misophonia, that you think that this kind of thing would help with it. And I had told you in looking at the EMDR stuff that thought had come to my mind as well. And it's similar to some of the things that I've discovered recently about how to deal with some of those triggers. Those triggers create a negative emotion just from the sound. Mm-hmm. So I hear somebody chewing and involuntarily it jerks this emotion, this negative emotion out of me.
Yeah.
It's not connected to a bad memory, but it's a repetitive sound that over time has created a negative emotion. So what happens is there's the trigger sound, and it creates a muscular reaction that triggers a negative emotion. And so anyway, to deprogram all of that, a lot of it is dissociating the negative reaction and bringing into it a positive thought, saying a positive word that makes you think positively, like smile, no threat.
Yeah.
So smile, when you think of smiling, it kind of makes you feel good.
Yeah.
And then tell yourself there's no threat here.
Yeah.
And doing that repeatedly with a mild trigger. So anyway, same basic kind of idea. What we're not saying is as youth workers, you need to start going waving your hand back and forth in front of a kid. But
it's like a Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, but to understand that there are these things going on in these kids' lives that are real and they're deep. And to us, we may look at some of them and say, they're not that deep. Things get worse as you get older. But for whatever reason, kids, like anybody, are connected to some traumatic events. Even the event of divorce is a traumatic thing. There's a severe loss of identity and all kinds of things that can come from that. And we have to understand a little more behind the scenes. We're not, rather than just deal with a lot of our discipline in youth ministry is a Band-Aid mentality rather than actually digging in and dealing with some of the issues with the kids, which we can't do outside of relationship, outside of taking time with them. And a lot of us, you know, we're in youth ministry because we love kids and we love to have relationships with, you know, with them and be a positive influence, but we don't tend to be comfortable digging into some of the negative stuff. And so we got to take time to see what's behind. Yeah, exactly what you were saying, but oh my goodness, still so much to say, but we're really kind of running out of time.
Yeah, but no, I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, and there are some people that go, oh, I'm not into this whole, you know, science thing and, you know, God's not, well here's the thing, okay, like it's not hypnosis. A lot of people were asking
they're
me about
completely,
that
they're,
you know,
completely,
well,
aware.
I don't believe in hypnosis. Well, you know, I don't particularly want to be hypnotized either, but this isn't hypnosis, and what it's doing is it's somebody helping your body do what your body naturally wants to do,
and simulating rapid eye movement triggers some of that processing of memories.
Exactly.
So it opens it up to be reconnected to positive thinking.
I told this guy, I said, you know, God's given you a gift and you're a healer. And honestly, it's no different than if you get a cut and then you put an antibiotic on your cut and put a Band-Aid on. What you're doing is you're doing what your body would normally do. Your body would send antibodies and would build a scab to keep the wound clean and keep dirty stuff from getting in.
Right.
But we tend to pick at our scabs and stuff like that. And so the wound doesn't stay clean and it gets infected. And so your body has a natural mechanism for that. And nobody would say, well, I don't believe in putting antibiotic on a, or, you know, an antiseptic or something on a wound because, you know, it's not from God. Well, you know, God gave us the intelligence and the science so that we could create this kind of stuff. And really, I think when you look at neuroscience, I mean, there's a lot in us that's broken,
right?
You know, and it's what he allowed me to do is get my brain to a place that it would have otherwise been had this trauma not happened, had this wound not happened. So like we had Mark on talking about, and he said the steps are, you know, you gotta clean out the wound, you gotta keep it clean, and then if it's more than you can do yourself, you gotta go get help. Well,
right.
I didn't even know how to begin to clean out the wound because every time this wound came up, I freaked out. And my response was that I could not clean it out.
Right.
So he helped me to clean it out, and he's helped me to keep it clean by replacing that traumatic thought that was tied to a negative emotion with the positive emotion that I have power in Christ over this. And as I see myself covering my younger self, I see Christ covering me. And that's a really powerful image for me, and I can root myself in that, right? And then since it was more than I can handle, I went and I sought help. And so it's really cool that
The old adage, you know, positive thinking will put a spring in your step.
Yeah.
The Journal for Behavioral Something and Experimental Something, something like that. Anyway, talked about a study that was done that showed that the reverse is also true. You put a spring in your step and it positively affects your mood.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool. And the description of the study was fascinating and sound. It's very sound. So just if you're in it, if you struggle with depression, just not the positive thinking to put a spring in your step, but walk just even your walking motion in such a way as if you were in a good mood, a spring in your step will begin to transform your thinking.
And obviously we're not saying that, you know, deep depression and deep hurts can be cured just by positive thinking. I mean, it may for some, but sometimes it needs a lot more. And so I actually may seek out an EMDR specialist in this area that is a Christian that I can go to and process more things. You know, I've never worked with anybody to process the pain from my parents' divorce or, you know, anything like that. And so, you know, this could be a very positive thing.
Well, and we live in an area that is so deeply impacted by, you know, seasonal affective disorder, you know, the lack of sunshine for so long, especially this year with how long the rainy season was and how crazy it was. And it just, it was so much worse than normal. Just even depression on that level. These kinds of things can be powerful. The mind is amazing, and neuroscience is so young that you can't just discount all of this stuff as psychobabble.
Nope.
There's beauty and depth and reality behind it all. And it doesn't negate the power of God, because we acknowledge and understand who made the brain that way.
Mm-hmm.
God did. God created us with these mechanisms for dealing with things.
Absolutely.
And so anyway,
we
need to move on.
All right, so if you've got a story on how God has used neuroscience to help you out in any way, we'd love to hear it. Or if you just want to chime in and give us feedback on our stories, feel free to hit us up on the internet. Go to eclectic.com. That's eclectic. You can email us, podcast@eclectic.com. Find us on Twitter @eclectic. And on Facebook, we're at facebook.com/IamEclectic. I'm Rob.
And I'm Scott.
Thanks for listening, and stay eclectic.